Breaking news,
and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $200 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets and see why. It's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia. Terms and conditions apply.
And here we are again, back at it again for another week of the Expressway. I'm your co-host, Charles Show Me The Way. I'm here with my partner in crime, the BT Express, Billy Teller. And we're here to take you through the world of sports, specifically New York Giants and New York Jets football, as well as other exciting news in the world of sports that's going on within the past few weeks. Today, obviously, the Saquon Barkley dilemma is put to rest. Everybody's excited to have him in camp, but we have to talk about what's been going on at Giants camp. Obviously, they started, had their first padded practice this week. What do you say, my man BT, about what's going on at the G-men's camp this week?
Well, see, I love the way Brian Daboll does things, and I like the way he put him in shorts in the first week, and then they gradually get into the full pads thing. I was just wondering, you know, how much do you go in full pads when you got a game, a good game, I mean, early game against the Cowboys, and you got to be ready, but you don't want to get anybody hurt. A lot of teams don't hit in training camp anymore, and I'm trying to figure what the Giants are going to do about it. I guess we'll see pretty soon, but they've got to get themselves ready before everybody to beat the Cowboys on September 10th.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. When you look at camp, you're always looking to see who's exciting you, who's flashing, who's making a big play, who's standing out. But you're also looking at who's the disappointments, and especially you don't want those disappointments to be in key areas. Obviously, the offensive line, you want those guys to be ready to already be in a groove since they most of them have worked together. And so you're looking for if Evan Neal is having a good week, having a good training camp so far, because he's young. This is his second year. You should look for improvement from him. And so, but, you know, reports out of campus, Evan Neal hasn't looked as good as everyone would have liked. And are you concerned that he's not looking in as good a condition as we would like him to look this early in training camp?
Well, the reason I have to let it go is because he said he put on about, I think he said something like 15 extra pounds of muscle. And I think that when an offensive lineman puts on muscle and still keeps his agility with his quick feet and stuff, let him work on it for a while because we haven't even got to the first preseason game. So the main thing he's trying to do is go through the mental part of it so that he's ready by, you know, I could say the first game, but the first preseason game, I think they play Detroit in about 8 days. I just think that he's doing it the right way because you don't really want to be good the first day. You want to be good the last day to get your game better. And for offense, as you know, Charles, it takes an offense a longer than the defense to get ready because the defense, all they do is fly around the field. If one person makes a mistake on the offense, the whole play is ruined. So that's why I think he's starting off slow, but I'm looking for him to rebound because it's his second year. He knows what's going on. He added the muscle that he thought it would help him during the course of the year. And we'll just have to see. But you can, you know, once you get that muscle, then you got to work on your cardio. And hopefully, you know, the Giants are teachers as coaches, and I think they can bring him into the form that they need him to be.
Yeah, I'm hoping that is the case because he is a critical piece to that offense. And how he goes, how those two offensive tackle goes is how the Giants go. Because I think the key to any success to the offense is, A, getting that run game going, getting Saquon going, but also protecting Daniel Jones. We saw in that Philadelphia Eagles game, that playoff game last year, where he didn't have enough time and he was just running for his life most of the time. If you give Daniel Jones enough time, I think he has the weapons to make things happen. We just need to give him time. And so that's going to be a key critical focus on that offensive line and Evan Neal.
Well, I think also they've got great competition at wide receiver, because I can't tell you today who's going to be the starters. They got a lot of people. LeBron James, he talked about one of the guys he liked at wide receiver wanting to play because he's got 4.3 speed. They got the kid, Jalen Hyatt from University of Tennessee, who's a game breaker. And that's the first time they had that in a while, along with Sterling Sharp. Wandell Robinson, I think he's going to be on the injured list for a little while. But in the tight end position with Daniel Bellinger and Darren Waller, they are going to be reckoned with, because this is the first time probably since before Eli that they had that kind of talent at wide receiver. And I think with that, that's going to open up everything for the Giants. And I think Saquon Barkley is going to be the benefactor in that, because he's going to be not used as much as last year, and they won't key on him if the receivers start to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, one of the guys that who was probably definitely a bright spot, especially after all of the injuries occurred last year, was Isaiah Hodgins. And it looks like from all reports is that he's not having as good a camp as we would have liked, especially coming in as a free agent and actually standing out during the season, being a critical piece to what Daniel Jones was doing and the success of that offense that helped them get to the playoffs. For him, do you think the addition of guys like a Paris Campbell and
yes,
and Darren Waller has impacted the fact that they may not be focused on him as much, and all the attention is to these two guys, and so he's feeling like I'm that free agent again, and not being as important of a threat this year, and maybe that's having an impact. But if I'm a free agent, if I was a free agent, I'm trying to get mine. I'm trying to let people see that I'm still just as important as these other guys you bought in. And I showed out last year, and I want to continue to show out. So I worry about the complacency issue. When I hear stuff like that, I just worry about, is he resting on his laurels? Is he getting complacent, like having that, being like that big time type of guy, like I got this, and not really doing the work that he needs to be the guy he needs to be?
I think that all going to come to the light, because, I've never liked, ever since my rookie year, I've never really liked preseason. I think the games are meaningless for a veteran player. It's a tough situation, and I know that Dable's going to make sure he makes the right decision on who plays in the preseason, who doesn't. He should not really allow Saquon Barkley to really get even close to being beat up. And I think because Saquon usually comes in great shape, he looks good. I just wonder, how this offense is going to look with the new rookie center named John Michael Smits. And the thing about him is that, he's a rookie, and they're, playing the offensive line where he's got to make the calls. But a lot of people, even his coach at Minnesota, said that, he's one of the best centers in the game. But I very rarely see a rookie center, Charles, that really is able to play with that kind of effort unless he knows what he's doing. So hopefully the many starts he had at Minnesota will help him to be able to compete on the offensive line and make the right calls to everybody, the guards and the tackles, because offensive line is key to the Giants getting better this year.
Well, from all reports, it's like he's having a very solid camp. He seems like he's really acting like a veteran. If you were to come off the street and walk onto the field, you wouldn't be able to tell a difference between a rookie and a veteran if he stood next to him, because he is conducting himself like he's been there for 5 to 10 years. And you like that, especially from the offensive line position. You like those guys with that maturity, that confidence, especially being new. And the offensive line room, they like to do everything together. And that's how they meld, and that's how they mesh, and that's how they become a cohesive unit. And it seems like he's kind of integrated himself into that offensive line room seamlessly. All the reports out of the camp is like, they love this guy. The players love this guy. And I think he's going to be a critical addition to that offensive line. When you look at the whole offense as a whole, and you talked about Saquon Barkley, especially, I think when you put pads on, the two positions that take the most beating are the offensive line and tight end, and it was the fullback before they didn't have the fullback, right? but really, everybody else nowadays, you're barely getting touched, right? It's not like it was back in the day where you're really thumping them. They don't even want you to touch the running back. It's like, let me find a hole, make sure I hold on to the ball, and that's it, right? And so I think the padded practices are really mainly for the front seven, and after that, it's still like I'm wearing shorts.
Yeah, but see, I think that if they did not, you know, they kept it like they're doing for the last so many years and not really hitting much in practice, you might be still playing, Charles. <'Cause>, you know, because you don't have to go and hit them linebackers in the practice. And in practice, you can't cut them, so you got to go ahead mano-mano. So that's why I think that you would probably still be playing. This might be your 20th year.
Hey, I think all of us back in the day when the fullbacks were alive and kicking and not extinct. But, I mean, the way they practice now, and I'm like, man, we could have played for 30 years. Because remember, fullbacks used to play at least 30 plays a game, if not 40. You were on the field nonstop. And so now you're probably – if a team has a fullback, they may be on the field 10 plays a game, 10 to 15 plays a game, and that's pushing it. So, hey, I think – hey, I would be a glorified long snapper. Just make sure I stayed in shape. Let me go run onto the field for goal line, maybe a couple of plays in the field. I'm going to play for the rest of my life. And you don't even have to pay me $1 million. Just give me minimum. $500,000 for 20 seasons, I'm good to go.
You know, what makes me laugh is people ask me, what position would you like, you know, say your son to play or something like that, or your daughter or whatever, because I got this tackling football women's club in Long Island. And I told them either safety or kicker. And I said, why safety? Because the safeties don't hit anymore. They come up there just to defend the pass. I remember the safety coming up there, and one of my friends, Beasley Reese, would he come up there like he's going to kill somebody, and the play is already over. And so that's why I like safety, because you're the deepest man deep. That's what you do. And you don't really have to come up like they did in the olden days and try to knock somebody out. You're just trying to make sure you hopefully get rid of the ball. I mean, get them to a fumble or something like that. But I'd take safety and kicker or punter if I was designing something.
You know, you got to do long snapper.
Yeah, you're right.
You got to put long snapper in there.
Yep, you're exactly right.
And I think for the next show, we probably got to put a list together of the dirtiest safeties of all time. And the dirtiest, because it was a bunch of them. And remember Andre Waters?
Yes. but I think Charles, and I didn't get to play with him or nothing like that, but I read his book, and the book is called They Call Me the Assassin. And it was Jack Tatum of the Raiders. Okay. And the thing about it is that he knocked out Daryl Stingley and made him paralyzed for life. And they enjoyed that kind of stuff. I mean, they laughed at it. They had fun with it. I never liked that. I never wanted to see somebody carried off the field, no matter how bad I don't like your team. It's just that Jack Tatum and this other guy named Atkinson, they were the two meanest, nastiest safeties in the game. They would let you catch the ball because they wanted to knock you out. That's and they get points for knocking people out. And I tell you, man, that's when safety was dangerous. And now it's not dangerous anymore.
The receivers wouldn't want to go across the middle. It was like, I'm going to make you scared. You catch that ball again, I'm going to make you scared. Well, you're listening to The Expressway with the BT Express, Billy Taylor and Charles Shoke Me the Way, right here on NFL Alumni Media. We'll be right back in a moment with the Jets training camp. Talk to you in a minute. And welcome back to the Expressway. I'm your co-host, Charles Show Me the Way, here with the BT Express, Billy Taylor. We just got finished talking about the goings and comings of the New York Giants training camp. But before we go to the Jets, I just want to touch on one thing. We talked about Deontay Banks, the rookie, who's supposed to actually be penciled in into that starting right corner position. And the reports out of camp is he's not having a great camp. So what do you think is the cause? Obviously, he's a rookie, and it takes some time to get used to the game, not being as physical as you are able to be in college. And do you think that's part of it?
Absolutely, because as you know, when you play, go from college to the NFL, the speed of the game is the big change. I mean, everybody's going at a faster pace. Everybody's bigger and stronger. You know, people would say sometimes, Charles, that, you know, the leading college team could beat the weak NFL team. I don't believe that at all, because I believe the NFL has a bunch of number one draft choices. A college team, maybe I have only three or four, except for University of Georgia, may have five or six players that has a chance at the NFL. But the NFL's worst could beat the NFL, beat the college best. So I just think the speed of the game, you have to learn it quickly. And for a rookie, you got to come in and know what you're doing as fast as you can, because they expect you to show why they drafted you in that particular position.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $200 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, I agree with that. When you look at coming in and it's different, because in college you're able to touch them as long as the ball isn't thrown. You can touch them all the way down the field. And he is a physical player. That's what made everyone love him, because he was very physical with the receivers coming off the ball. And I think that helped him in man position. But now in the NFL, you have 5 yards and you got to use your quickness to stay with receivers, your quickness and speed to stay with receivers once you get past that 5 yards. And I think it's an adjustment. It's going to be an adjustment for him to get used to that. Another guy, before we turn to the Jets, another guy that I'm surprised that I haven't heard many great things about is Darnay Holmes. He's not having a great camp either. And now you start to question, is one of our strengths on our defense, is it going to be a weakness? You know, and are our cornerbacks and DBs going to be ready for the opening day?
Well, the thing I have to take in consideration is that this is the learning period. This is when you make your mistakes. This is when you try out new things. This is when the quarterback throws in double coverage to realize what he cannot do. I just think that by the time they get to the second or third exhibition game, they're going to have things pretty much together. They're going to have a better idea who can play and who cannot. I just think it's, you know, the rookies and the young players really have to show their stuff during the preseason. So that's what I'm going to look at. Who stands out for me? Who makes the big plays? Who's around the ball? So I'm anxious to see how the Giants do it on defense, because for the first time, we got an offense that might be able to keep people off the field and keep the clock moving.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I can't wait to see how things transpire, especially since that unit was supposed to be their strongest out of the three positions on the defensive side of the ball. Let's turn our attention to the Jets. A lot of stuff going on with the Jets this week. Sean Payton just went all in on your boy, Nathaniel Hackett, which, I mean, rightfully, probably deservingly, I don't know, but as a coach, when you're in the business, do you think it's right to kind of throw stones when you know you're living in a glass house, when you can get critiqued on everything you do? And do you think it was right of Sean to put on that commentator's hat like he said he had on when he went in and said that Nathaniel Hackett did probably one of the worst jobs ever in coaching with that team last year?
Yeah, but I have been saying to you since we've been on, Charles, that there are so many bad coaches in the league. And Dable really showed me it, because he's teaching people. And I don't think you have enough teachers out there. Peyton is a teacher. You play for Peyton, is that right? Did you play That's for him? Right.
No, yeah. No, yeah, I did. I did.
And see, I used to talk to him because his wife used to listen to me on Saturday mornings. So he used to tell me what she was saying because she learned football from me. And I was totally blown away that he did that. And I was trying to figure out why. And it may be because people are not they're not keeping themselves keeping introverted on their words anymore. People are talking trash to anybody nowadays. And I think that might be one of the reasons Sean Payton did it. They say he's trying to motivate or show his quarterback, Russell Wilson, that was the reason for it. But I just think it's going to be a negative on his shoulders unless his team, the Denver Broncos, come out of the West. They got a tough schedule. They got a tough game. I think in the beginning they could have the advantage because they're playing, you know, above sea level, 2,500 feet, and the opposition, the team gets tired quicker, so they have to use that to their advantage. But I didn't think what Payton said was really worthy of him taking all the negativity, because even though it's an unwritten rule, he definitely shouldn't have said that, because, you know, you never know when you have to go back across that bridge. I know he probably won't have to, but, you know, they play the Jets October the 5th, and the people are circling that. And you don't want to give them extra incentive to kind of kick your behind.
I guarantee you the networks will want to flex that game, because that would be
that's exactly right.
Especially if both teams are doing well, as everyone expects. Hopefully Russell Wilson can have a better camp for the Denver Broncos, because he looked god awful last year. I'm talking about, he looked like he should be out of the league, time to retire situation. So
yeah, but what I saw, Charles, okay, they opened up against Russell's old team, Seattle, the first game of the season. They could barely get the snap off. I mean, they were late in the snap count. I think they got three or four penalties for not getting the ball off in time. And a lot of people blame that on the quarterback, but they blame it on the coach. And that's one of the coaching 101s that I thought was get the ball off first. You know, let the center hike the ball so you don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. They get out of the huddle late, and they get the ball off snapping late. So I think that's a coaching problem. And as I watched the guy coach last year, Sean Payton was correct. He's a bad coach.
But now you're hoping that he's a great coach because he's coaching the New York Jets.
Yeah, but he's not the head coach. He's like a quarterback coach or offensive-minded coach. So, you know, he's with his boy Aaron Rodgers, and I'm anxious to see how that relationship clicks out, because Aaron went to bat for him. You know, told him he's a good guy. A lot of people say he's a good guy, but like I said before, and a couple of years ago, I don't remember the name of the coaches who coached 1 year with the Jets. And he when the defense was on the sideline, he was sitting on the bench. And I just thought that was terrible coaching, because it doesn't allow you to see who the leader is. And so, like I said before, you know, the good coaches stand out because the bad coaches look so bad.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. The other news that's coming out of camp is how good Sauce Gardner has looked. We talked about Hall of Famers, right? We talked about potential Hall of Famers in the league, and it's hard to identify potential Hall of Famers in this era because a lot of guys don't play very long.
Yep.
But when you look at guys who have the potential to be a Hall of Famer at a position, You gotta look at Sauce Gardner as that guy, because when you look at the things that he can do, I mean, even other teammates are comparing him to some guy like Richard Sherman, right? They're comparing him to guys that are lockdown corners. And so when you do that, there should be some excitement on your team.
Well, the thing that I see is that he's got great confidence. He was a defensive rookie. He made the defensive all-rookie team. He's a shutdown corner, which means that he can make your team play 9-on-10 because he's taking that receiver completely out the game. When I watched him play last year, there was very little room for error. If the quarterback did get the ball in, he had maybe an inch or two to get it in because Sauce Gardner was right on the receiver's he was right on his jockstrap. So I look for how he does the second year with a better team. And if he can do what he's doing from a defensive standpoint, it allows you to do a lot more, knowing that you have somebody who can shut somebody down.
Absolutely. And staying on the defensive side of the ball, a guy that I didn't think would have any impact, but is actually opening a whole bunch of people's eyes is Will McDonald IV. And they're saying that, I mean, he's been probably one of the most exciting players as a rookie coming in. And think about it. He's playing defensive. He's playing defensive end. You don't think him as a rookie not being very big, not being very strong compared to everybody else, a lot of the veterans in that room, you wouldn't think that he would even, you know, be noticeable based on how good their defensive line is. And everyone's saying this dude is flashing some ability. So the Jets may have seen something that none of us saw when they drafted him.
Yeah, but if they can have someone like that, they can guarantee it's going to put pressure on the quarterback or have to be double teamed to allow the interior lineman to play one-on-one, that's doing nothing but helping your team. And I think the Jets have done a good job in drafting. They got a lot of young players on that team. And if they can get it correct, you know, with Aaron Rodgers being there, and Rodgers, I think I got the impression that if they did not win the Super Bowl this year, he's definitely coming back for more years. And he'd be kind of ignorant not to come back, especially as good as he looks, because, you know, he can probably play, I'd say, at least a 42. Brady played to 45. And I think it's going to be a key for the Jets to be able to have their defense even do better than they did last year by giving the ball back to the offense and make them go a short field to score.
Yeah, I think that one of the key players that is going to be critical to making that offensive goal, we just talked about Evan Neal from the Giants, it's going to be Mekhi Becton for the Jets. And he's saying that he's taking the first game as like it's a regular season game so he can get himself together. Do you think that he should play at least a good half just because he missed an entire season, or do you kind of work him in to the season since you do have four preseason games?
I think you got to work him in. Mm-hmm. I understand you want him to play a half and stuff and get everything together, but a lot of things start in practice. If they got good hard practices and the people are moving around, the offensive line is working on stuff they're going to look for in the game, then that's fine. But if you play him too much, you risk the chance of him getting injured. And Mekhi Becton is a gigantic guy. He's one of the biggest offensive linemen in the game. And they're looking at the right tackle position so that hopefully he can get ready and play left tackle, the blind side for Aaron Rodgers. So it's going to be interesting in the preseason to see what they do, because I don't think you want to play everybody a whole bunch, because you don't want to risk, especially your starting people. But in order for the offensive line to get better, they got to play and they got to practice.
That's right. And I'm curious. I mean, obviously the game is this week. Their Hall of Fame game is this week. I'm interested to see how Zach Wilson is doing. Has Nathaniel Hackett been able to unlock Zach Williams' potential? And I'm curious, and this is what the preseason is for. I don't need to see what Aaron Rodgers can do. Maybe some trying to get some chemistry with the offense, but he knows he's been there. He's worked enough with that offense during camp that I don't need to see Aaron Rodgers. The key to the Jets' success as opposed to the Giants is Aaron Rodgers needs to stay healthy for the all 17 games for them to have a legit chance to not only win the division, but win an AFC championship game.
Well, I think Zach Wilson's going to get a lot of reps in the exhibition season. When I was watching him practice the other day, he was doing exactly what Aaron Rodgers was doing, getting rid of the ball in 1.5 seconds. And I think I've always thought it was key, and I didn't understand it probably my whole life in the NFL, was why quarterbacks, when they're taking a beating back there or they're having a offensive line problems, why don't they get rid of the ball quicker? You always got a hot man. I mean, when the fullback was there, you could throw it off to the fullback. Halfbacks out there, the tight ends don't run long routes. So know who your hot man is every time. And if you do that, you can be a better quarterback. I'm looking for Zach Wilson to improve in the preseason because he's around Aaron Rodgers. He does what he does. He knows how to do certain things. And if he can teach him how to read the defenses and how to acclimate himself, he can improve in the preseason. And that's what you want, because if, you know, something happens to Aaron Rodgers, that's what you have to deal with.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia.
That is a great point. I'm looking forward to seeing how much he has improved in that first preseason game in the Hall of Fame game this week. We will be right back in a moment. We're going to talk about some of the news that's been going around the NFL when we come right back in a minute. Welcome back to the Expressway. You're listening to the BT Express, Billy Taylor and Charles Show Me the Way here every week, talking about New York and New York Giants and New York Jets football, as well as all the other sporting news in the world of sports today. We have an exciting segment here in our third quarter where we talk about anything and everything that's on our mind. And this week we are going to talk about all the injuries in the NFL. Joe Burrow went down last week with a calf strain. How impactful, given how they started last year when Burrow went out with the appendectomy, I believe he had his appendix burst and he had to have an emergency surgery. They started off slow because of that. How impactful does this injury hurt the Cincinnati Bengals, given it? Because he wasn't around last year for the training camp, they started off slow. Do you think they have the luxury of doing the same thing?
Yeah, I do, because it's a calf injury. It's not a knee. It's not an ankle. And I think he can come back full speed from that. But they've got to be able to watch it and keep him off it for the next couple of weeks. But, Charles, that leads me to another point. They talk about, you know, quarterbacks getting hurt and him out and hurting the team. What happened? Running back gets hurt. He's in the same situation as the quarterback. They need him. They need each other. So then you're down in the running back for getting hurt. And a lot of quarterbacks have gotten hurt. I've seen that so many times as quarterbacks get hurt and nobody says anything because they're not a running back. I mean, running backs have esteemed to the lowest level that you could possibly get in a football league. What would you tell some little kid who came up to you? Said, I like you playing running back. Should I play running back when I go to high school or college? What do you tell them?
Not if you want to get paid, but if that's the only position you're good at and you don't like tackling people, then you can't play on the defensive side of the ball. And if you're not 6'2", you can't be play receiver either. So it's what the guy giving gifts you were given is going to tell you what you should play. But obviously the running back position has been taking a beating. We're going to try to get a running back summit. We're going to try to have a separate union just for running backs so we can go on strike about the salaries. But think about this. Walter Payton is rolling over in his grave what the running backs are making now. $15 million, $16 million a year. What was the max he made? $1 million? $2 million was the max he ever made in one season? So you're not getting any sympathy from an Eric Dickerson, right? They don't have any sympathy for you.
And I remember, Charles, when Eric Dickerson signed his contract with the L.A. Rams, he only got 900 and something thousand. And because he wanted $1 million, he wanted to be $1 million player.
And he held out for that.
Yes, he did. And the team wouldn't want to do that. And then he gets traded. That's because right. I think they were mad at him because he wanted to have $1 million per year. Yeah. Then you think about it. He deserved it back then. That's it. The people didn't realize that they're still doing the running backs wrong. And that was almost 18, 19 years ago, maybe further than that. I like Eric Dickerson. I think he's one of the great running backs in the history of the NFL, and he didn't get $1 million a year.
That's right. And you and think about it. And back then when they were playing, they were playing more plays as a game than the running backs are playing now. There wasn't like the shuffling of in and out running backs. You didn't have two or three deep. You didn't have a rotation of running backs like you had with Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott getting the same amount of snaps. It was Eric Dickerson. It was Barry Sanders. It was Walter Payton, and they had about 30 to 40 snaps. They were running the ball 30 to 40 plays a game. And so how does that impact, you know, this era of running back? Because they're not being utilized as much as they were utilized and not taking the amount of beating that they were taking back then.
Yeah, but I see it's too deep for me because I realize all the things that a running back does because I'm a former running back. I mean, you don't just run the ball. You have to look at defenses. You got to study defenses. You got to know where the lanes are. You got to pick up the safety. And that means you're looking past the linebacker and all that. There's a lot of little things. People got mad at Saquon early in his career because he couldn't pick up the safety. He got better at that. And I just think, and we're talking about the quarterbacks being, you know, the guy Burrow getting hurt in Cincinnati. I just think that all people can get hurt. I mean, Brady missed one season because of an injury. They didn't try to display or downplay his salary. All the quarterbacks eventually, you know, take a beating. Danny Jones of the Giants, before this past year, he was hurt every year. You know, what makes it different from him to Saquon Barkley? He wasn't there to help the Giants when he was hurt, when he hurt his neck the season before last and missed the last five games. The Giants didn't make the playoffs. And see, that's why I get mad about the running back thing, because at least the running back is going full speed to make sure that, you know, he doesn't get hurt, and injuries do occur, and you have to realize that.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And like you said, I think it's the how you value the position, and money talks, and money has valued the quarterback position. Look at, like I said, we talked about Herbert from the Chargers. He's the highest paid quarterback in the NFL now. And does he deserve to be the highest paid quarterback? Probably not. But because of the way the structure and the timing of contracts come up, teams are saying, look, I better lock you up now. I'm going to have to pay you $100 million if, a year by the time your rookie contract is up. So they're trying to mitigate damages. And unfortunately, the running back is taking a hit. Another guy that I wanted to talk about, speaking of running backs, is Jonathan Taylor. And we were just talking about this offline. Do you think what their owner, the Colts' owner, said about the situation, do you think that should play a role in how Jonathan Taylor should kind of react to this situation?
But the owner, Ursay, of the Indianapolis Colts, I thought it was pathetic what he said. Because he said, if I die and somebody dies, nobody's going to think about it. And then he kind of downplayed, you know, Jonathan Taylor has put on a show every year he's been in the league. I mean, he's a home run hitter. He can take it 80 yards. And I could totally understand him being upset about it. But the bad thing for me is that they say he's not practicing now. He goes to practice, but he doesn't practice. And they may put him on a list where he won't get paid because he didn't play. And I think the things that they have over the football players has always been the same. They have the ability to you know, disrupt your salary because you're not compensating them. So I think Jonathan Taylor is totally underrated. I really, really do. This bad thing about this year, he's got a young quarterback, Anthony, I forgot his name, that came in as a first-round draft choice, drafted number 4 or 5. I just think that when you have a young quarterback, you don't need your running back. And for them to just kind of let it lag on and the owner to downplay it, I thought it was pathetic. And I think Jim Irsay, who went to school in Texas, he's a friend with Byron Hunt because they went to SMU together. I think, and he got the ownership because his father died. So that's the reason he got the money, because he's, you know, born with a gold tooth in his mouth. And then he downplays. And they know how much money these owners make. I mean, they put them on a salary cap, so they're guaranteed to make money. So I just don't like it at all when you put down a running back who's given you everything. And Jonathan Taylor has left it on the field every game I watched him.
Yeah. And do you think, I know he requested a trade, but Indianapolis is reluctant to trade him. But what do you do? And as far as the back injury is concerned, I still remember we were out at practice and Michael was actually upset about his contract, and he still had 1 year on his contract, but he wanted a new contract because he was the best DN in the league. I think he had just won the all-time sack leader, just became the all-time sack leader the year before. He was on his last year of his contract, and he was grossly underpaid. He was like, you got to pay me or I'm not practicing. He did the same thing. Oh, my back. Oh, my back. I hurt my back. And I'm like, that's one area you can't, as an athletic trainer or a doctor, that's one area where you probably can't tell if he's telling the truth or not. So that's probably the go-to position if you are trying to make a statement and still get paid and not play a Ben Simmons.
Listen, I think there's a lot of athletes who would like to be in that position. And I know Mike Strahan, he knew what his worth was. Uh-huh. And Stray always does. And I think that, the Giants eventually paid him and he got what he deserved, but they didn't treat him like the running back. And that's what kind of makes me mad. But on the defensive side nowadays, if you do anything good, they're going to give you a raise and not even complain about it. That's Dexter right. Lawrence and Leonard Williams both got raises this year. And I don't know who else is going to make money. I didn't see Darren, the guy that tied in from the Raiders. I didn't see what he was making, but pretty soon they got to tie him up too. And we'll see how it works out in the end. But I just think that a lot of people are being negatively talked about because of what they call the analytics. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, they were telling me that reason the running backs are downplaying them is because the analytics say they don't make it 17 games. They're injured a lot. All these little excuses they have, but when they're productive, like the running backs we have in the league, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, I think because they're better than everybody else, they deserve to be paid more than everybody else.
Yeah, I agree with you. When you look at
breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $200 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia. Terms and conditions apply.
For me, when you look at the offensive side of the ball and all of the positions on the offensive side of the ball, I think the bottom of that totem pole on the positions on the offensive side of the ball is running back. My question to you is, who's on the bottom of the totem pole on the defensive side of the ball? Who's not getting paid on the defensive side of the ball? What position? Is it safety? Is it linebacker?
Well, it could be safety because, they're way deep. And they got to either put on a show or let someone notice that you're there by getting interceptions. The linebackers, if they do great, they can get paid. The defensive line has shown you they can get paid, like with Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence. And I just think the cornerbacks can get paid if you shut down people. I'm looking for the great defensive backs, Adoree Jackson for the Giants, to really come up strong and get Deontay Banks where he should be. So I just think that maybe the safeties, but they're not doing anybody like they did the running backs. Anybody. Yeah. Maybe a kicker, maybe a punter, maybe a place kicker. They may say, well, you don't deserve to get $5 million. You might get $3 million. But anyway, so I just think that there's no really position on defense except maybe the safety positions where you may not get what you deserve.
Yeah, I think that's right, because at the linebacker position, because you're right in the mix, and you have to be a dual threat at a linebacker position. So if you're able to stop the run and cover the tight end, cover the back out of the backfield, if you can do that, you're worth every penny. Because if you have that, that's the unicorn. That's the secret sauce. That's the Ray Lewis when Ray Lewis was big time for this era, because you need different skills. Ray Lewis probably couldn't be the type of linebacker he was in this era because of the amount of passing teams are doing. Because Ray Lewis wasn't a guy to cover. He was great in the gaps and could run sideline to sideline. I don't think he would have been just as good of a linebacker. He's a Hall of Famer, and I'm not taking anything away from him. But he was a different style of linebacker. I don't know if that would have translated to this era. What do you think?
Well, the reason I don't think so, because he never took on the guards and tackles. He had those guys up front to keep people off of him. And so I think, you know, it would be a challenge for him at this time to have to be in on three downs to be able to defend against the tight ends and the crossing routes that they have. And he's a pretty smart guy. So I guess that factor remains, but I think, you know, even in the olden days, I don't think a lot of guys, wouldn't shy away from now playing because of the rules that are there. I mean, defensive back has got to change stripes because you can only attack them within 5 yards. So I just think, and that the game is made for the offense. Quarterback can't get touched. The receivers, you really can't kill them anymore. So that's why the receivers are talking all that trash, because they know they won't get killed.
That's right. And I just, like I said, the game is different. I just can't wait. Football season is right around the corner. The game start this week. Hall of Fame kickoff. Football season is in full effect. And really can't wait for Hard Knocks and see what they're doing at Jets camp this weekend.
Well, anyway, you listen to The Expressway with Billy Taylor and Charles Way. We're on each and every week. We come on YouTube at 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern time. So if you get a chance, make sure you check us out. We come back on the other side. We're going to talk about some of the teams in the AFC and where we think they're going to end up. So keep it where it is. We'll be right back with more on The Expressway after these messages.
Welcome back to The Expressway. I'm your co-host, Charles. Show me the way here with my partner in crime, the BT Express, Billy Taylor. You're listening to us on NFL Alumni Media and on anywhere you get your podcast from. Just download us and take a listen. We need you to hang out with us and listen and join us. And we're going to probably start some live sessions eventually. We're going to start working on a new platform where we can get live callers to get your live feedback on what's going on in the world of sports, especially Jets, Giants. But we wanted to turn our attention to the AFC, and kind of give you our predictions on each conference. We're obviously going to start off with the AFC East, where the Jets are. Jets are strong. And when you look at
breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $200 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia. Terms and conditions apply.
That conference, that's probably one of the toughest conferences in the NFL this year, because all of those teams are expected to do well. You got the Jets, you got New England, you got Buffalo, and you got Miami, and all of those teams are picked to win at least 8 games. I think the deciding factor is probably if Tua for Miami can stay healthy. If Tua can stay healthy, they're saying he's looking great. He's done some MMA training to get his body and head together. He's wearing special padding in his helmet. So given all of that, what do you think? What are you thinking?
Well, see, what scared me and really brought to light to me was when Dable of the Giants head coach, when he leaves there, Buffalo, to come here, Josh Allen didn't have a good year. He threw interceptions at the end of games and really took their team out of it. And they thought they were going to have momentum because their defensive back, number 3, had his heart problems. And they thought the crowd was going to get into it. They lost at home to Cincinnati. And I think that they, you know, without Dable there, maybe they got to step up. And maybe Josh Allen isn't the quarterback. As far as the Dolphins, I don't know what to say, because in Tua's whole career, even when he was at Alabama, he was missing games. And I think, you know, we talked about availability in a quarterback situation. I don't know if he can make it the whole season. He's so light and little. You know, he's got to do a Eli. You know how Eli used to avoid the rush, get rid of the ball way before it was time to. He's got to figure out something. But he's got the best talent in the AFC. He really does. Because I think that Hill receiver with that speedy guy from Kansas City is unbelievable. And Waddy's good. As far as the Pats are concerned, it's hard to count out Bill Belichick, but you know, if you look at it on paper, they're not going to be as good. They may not even make the playoffs. So the Jets have an opportunity. It's just that they open up with the Bills on the road, and then they got to come back I think their first eight games are pretty tough. So I just think it's going to be tough for the Jets, but we'll see if Aaron Rodgers is worth his money. He gave back $35 million so they can get other players, and I like him doing that. But what it shows me is that he's wealthy. In order to do that, he had to be wealthy because, you know, to give back $35 million, you can't ever get that back.
Yeah, and this, I think Belichick will solidify his position in the Hall of Fame day one if the Patriots do not end up dead last in this division. Because if you look at the rest of the division, they shouldn't be able to compete with the talent that they have compared to the rest of the division.
Yep.
So if they do not end up dead last in the division, you have to say Bill Belichick is probably the greatest coach of all time.
I agree with you. It's almost like I said last year, if Danny Jones leads the Giants to the playoffs this next year, he should get what he deserves. And then he led him to the playoffs, but people get mad at what he got at $40 million. I think that if Belichick does it this year, in spite of him not even being favored, in spite of the Bills of being the top team, a lot of people say, as far as the Dolphins' offense begins to progress, and then the Jets do what they do, he's got to be really, really a great coach in order for him to get in the top two. So it's going to be, I don't know, Robert Kraft's the owner. Robert Kraft said something like, "Is the people asking, was the coach on the hot seat?" He wouldn't answer the question. Belichick's been there a long time. He's got, you know, been to the Super Bowl with them eight times, won six, was two Super Bowls with the New York Giants when he was an assistant. So I just think he's a winner. But the only bad thing about him is that, and you know Belichick as well as I do, I've known him forever. He's really a good guy. He's smart as heck. He's funny. But when you see him in the press, you got to almost hate him. Because the way he does the press is totally disrespectful. So that's my problem with it. A lot of people don't know him. And the only way they can even give an example is the way he deals with the press.
And who wins that division?
I'm going to go with the Jets.
Yeah, I agree with you. The hype. I think I'm selling into the hype, maybe. but I'm gonna go with the Jets. Let's take the AFC North. You got the Bengals, the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Browns. I'm cautiously optimistic about the Cleveland Browns. They're saying Deshaun Watson is actually having a great camp so far in these first couple of weeks, and so I'm surprised because you think about it, they got a great run game. They got Hunt, and they have a great run game, which is going to help him. Their defense, if they improve on their defensive side of the ball, will help them a great deal. So I'm cautiously optimistic about the Bengals. I'm not crazy about the Pittsburgh Steelers. They got that rookie quarterback still there. He's in his second year. He should do a little better. But Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin you can almost put him in a category of Bill Belichick because they are consistent. They are consistently in the hunt for playoff position year in and year out. And so that consistency means something. The team that may surprise, especially given Joe Burrow's calf injury, and trust me, I had a calf injury, and I remember Dan Reeves telling me I was out like 4 weeks with my calf injury. And it wasn't getting better. He said, that boy going to suit up and play this week. I don't care if his calf is still hurt. But he needs to be out there. But calf injuries are pretty funny. So I think if the Bengals are healthy, yes, they're probably the tops in that division. But you got Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, right? Given what they did, Lamar Jackson is back, fully committed to the team. And they're just as – Harbaugh is just as consistent as Mike Tomlin. They're always in the hunt. So when you look at that division, the surprise team for me are the Cleveland Browns.
Well, the thing about it is I don't know, because I know a couple of years ago when Watson was at Houston, they were 4-something, but he led the league or came close to lead the league in passing. So they got a pretty good team because Baker Mayfield led them to the playoffs. And if they had a better quarterback, they may have gone even further. This may be one of the toughest divisions in the AFC. Well, excuse me, all the NFL is tough because I looked at the Jets and the Bills and the Dolphins and the Bears. That's a tough division itself. I look for the Ravens to win it with Lamar Jackson because he was already looking good and developing a rapport with Odell. And I think that's going to help them tremendously. The Bengals, I worry about because that's the second time that their quarterback has gotten hurt before the season starts. Mike Tomlin of the Steelers, I think he's one of the best coaches in the game. I don't know if he's got the right talent, but he's got the quarterback named Kenny Pickett, who went to the University of Pittsburgh, who said he had a great end of the season. And if he continues to shine, he may be a lot better. But I'm going with the Ravens to win the AFC North.
All right, now let's turn our attention to the AFC South, where you got the Jaguars, Titans, Colts, and Texans. If I were the Jets, I would want to be in this division because I probably can win it with a 9-8 record. But when you look at this division, it's not especially after you looked at the AFC East and AFC North. You look at this division, and it's like what it's always been. You don't have any great teams. Obviously, Jacksonville surprised a lot of people last year. Doug Peterson did what Doug Peterson does, will take a team to the heights that no one else could think. That's the guy who took the Eagles to their first Super Bowl win. And so what he's doing with Jacksonville and the things he's doing with Jacksonville, I think you still got to give it to Jacksonville because the Titans still don't have a quarterback. They still, Ryan Tannehill is still their number one quarterback, and I can't trust him as far as he can throw a 5-yard out, right? and the Colts are in shambles. They're young. They're still trying. That's a rebuilding project. And the Texans, even though they have a new head coach in D'Amico Ryans, I still think that's a rebuilding project too. So I got to go with the Jags, but you can't count the Tennessee Titans out.
Yeah, but I was blown away by Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville. They rebounded totally from the year before when they had the college coach who really put them in a big hole. And Trevor Lawrence proved why he was the number one pick in the NFL that year he came out. I'm going with Jacksonville, but I think that the Titans have a chance. It depends on who the quarterback is. Tannehill, who is their quarterback, I don't like him because he throws interceptions in critical games. But they do have Derrick Henry, and that allows them a chance. So, and I don't think the Colts, because of their rookie quarterback, are going to be in it at all. The Texans got a new coach. They got the number one pick from Ohio State, their quarterback. And I think he's not going to be ready in the beginning to get them going. It's very rarely a rookie leads a team to the playoffs. So I'm going to go with the Jaguars. I'm agree with you on that one.
All right, and our last division, the AFC West, which is probably comparable, but maybe not because they're having some question marks. You got the Chiefs, Chargers, Raiders, and the Broncos. I mean, are we thinking the Broncos are going to be substantially different with a different head coach? Possibly. Everybody loves Sean Payton. You even said it on this show that Sean Payton is a teacher, and he's done an amazing job wherever he's went. Look at what he did to the New Orleans Saints and how he's changed that organization around. So when you look at that division, obviously the Chiefs are the cream of the crop. That's, you put them 1-2 with the Philadelphia Eagles as the best team in the entire NFL. But after that, Chargers, I'm not sold. I don't like their coach. I don't like their ownership. I'm not crazy about them. So I'm not sold. I think if you're talking about how coaching can impact how well you do, I think that's a team that has proven that coaching has impact their ability to win. Raiders, they're still in flux. They got Jimmy G, and he's back with his coach, and let's see what they can do together. But outside of the Chiefs, I don't see who else stands out in that group.
I like what you talked about, but the Broncos might contend if coaching is what I said it to be. If you get, could be the year before they brought in Russell Wilson, all they said was just like the Jets did, all we need is a quarterback in Denver. They got a quarterback, bad coaching, it didn't work. The Raiders, I don't like their coach at all. He's a protege of Bill Belichick, hasn't done anything in the NFL from a head coaching standpoint. I think he made a mistake by getting rid of Darren Waller, the tight end. And the Chargers, they've proven to me that the coach is lacking something because they're in games. And I hate that decision when they go for two, when they should go for one. And they were doing that in the playoffs and end up losing. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs in that. The Broncos could do something. I don't look for the Raiders and Chargers to do anything.
Yeah. So who's the worst team in that division? Is it the Raiders or the Chargers?
It might. I'm gonna go with the Raiders because, like I said, you know, their quarterback is Jimmy G, who's got a lot of stuff to prove. They don't have Josh, the running back, and I think he's great. That's stupid for them not to re-sign him, leading the NFL, and then you need him because in order for Jimmy G's play action to work, he's got to have a running game.
And do you think they will sign him before this, or he'll sign before the season? Because realize, we talked about this, that running back position, you don't get that money back, especially at that position. Even if he signs for 15 or 60 million that he wants, even if you sign it, you're missing another $10 million you could have made the year before. And as a running back, you're not guaranteed the next year. And so just like Saquon did, he signed for $11 million, $12 million incentive-laden contract, got his money. At least he's not going to miss out on that money. What I'm afraid is that he's going to miss out on the money he would have earned this year if he doesn't play this year, and he will never get it back, never.
Well, and I agree with you. I think that, you know, if there's $10 million on the table for Josh, the running back for the LA Raiders, he needs to take it before they try to do some kind of situation where they put him on PUP or some kind of situation where he doesn't get paid, and that would only hurt his game. And just like Saquon, even though $10 million isn't great, he still needs to get the money and try to do something else with it. So I totally agree with. Anyway, you've been listening to The Expressway with Billy Taylor and Charles Way. We're on each and every week, and we come on Fridays on the YouTube at 9 a.m. Eastern time. And Ben, who's back in the studio, takes care of us like we are his superstar. So got to thank Ben back in the studio. We'll talk to you next week as the NFL preseason begins, starting with the Jets and Cleveland in the Hall of Fame game. So for Charles Way, I'm Billy Taylor, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good week, and thanks for joining us.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $200 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia. Terms and conditions apply. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $200 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia. Terms and conditions apply.